Because of the coronavirus pandemic, almost all, if not all, educational institutions in the U.S. have closed their campuses and moved to online learning. This includes Salisbury University. How does all this work? What are the mechanisms universities use to manage this instruction process? Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. My guest to talk about how the pandemic has basically upended university education is Adam Wood, chairman of the Department of English at Salisbury University and chair of the Committee on Academic Freedom and Tenure. Adam, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Education is a complex and complicated process. What learning and management systems, Adam, do you use at Salisbury and do universities use in general? What are these systems that you have in place?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple that we've had up and running for a while for, faculty to host, in addition to online classes, to have sort of online discussion boards. And so there are different products, Canvas and Blackboard and things like that. The university's been using those for a while, but since COVID-19 has kicked in, Zoom has really been the platform that we, and I think most universities, have gone to. For those people who aren't yet familiar with it, I can't imagine too many. But it's sort of a, an updated version of Skype where you can, if you choose to, have your entire class kind of running at the normal time and attempting to work it as normally as possible. You know, students digitally raise their hand and you can call on them. But at the same time, it's not the same as face-to-face. You know, it's a very, very different sort of environment. And it's also tricky to really keep people on top of things. You know, it's difficult if you can't see everybody, if not everyone has the same technological abilities. Some students are just sort of calling in on the phone, so you don't get to see them and they can't quite interact in the same way. And so while Zoom has allowed, I think, faculty across the nation to continue delivering education, it's obviously not the ideal setting. You know, most faculty, the vast majority of faculty teaching at universities right now, have never taught online before. This was a totally new process for them, and a lot of times with curricular updates, there's at least a year, sometimes two, to kind of get ready for things, where the reality was that, here at SU and at institutions across the country, we all had basically a week, maybe two, to kind of get used to this technology and to shift all of our classes onto online platforms in some way or the other. But it's really been remarkable to me to see, especially the faculty that I know here at SU, how quickly and effectively they have stepped into this. I think most faculty, and again, this is, I don't have any data on this, but most faculty, I think, are doing mostly Zoom interactions. Some do partial Zoom, some do certain online exercises, and other faculty are doing what's known as asynchronous instruction, where they will kind of record their own lectures and then have that available for students to watch at different times. I think one faculty member I know who, really felt that teaching in some ways is a performance, and he was concerned that he wouldn't be able to get that same sort of feeling through the Zoom interactions. So he just kind of wired himself up and recorded all of his lectures and was able to kind of go through it as he felt he would in class. There are other faculty who are doing fully online, right? They're not using any of the Zoom technology so much, but are posting everything online, focusing on chat discussions and other sorts of things. And so there's a wide range, but I would say that most have really kind of leaned into the Zoom platform. In terms of other work at the university, all of these kind of things, shared governance, committee meetings, all those things are still having to continue. You know, we couldn't really put that on hold. And so all of those meetings tend to be held by Zoom. I'm also the president of the Salisbury University Faculty Senate this year. And we had to very quickly figure out how to hold Senate meetings and follow Robert's rules and all those things via the Zoom platform. And we knew we had a number of very important issues related to COVID-19 that we had to get into. And so we went into for a period of about a month and a half, 2 months of weekly meetings via Zoom, really trying to get ahead of some of the issues that might be coming connected to COVID-19. One of which is grading policies. A number of universities have done what SU has done, not that we did it first, but we have shifted to a pass, no pass model that students can opt into. If they would prefer to get the traditional letter grade, you know, A, B, C, D, F, they can do that. But if they choose to opt for a pass, no pass option, they can do that. And even if they don't pass, it doesn't have the negative impacts on their GPAs that a D or an F would do. And so we had to really think about things like that. The Senate, you know, thankfully passed that through. We also passed an extension clock for untenured faculty members' time towards tenure. And so we've really had to, in some ways, increase our workload considerably to get done everything we need to get done. But, you know, other than a couple of grumblers, it's really been amazing to me that faculty here at SU and I think across the country have all just simply accepted this is what we have to do right now and we just need to figure it out. And again, I think we've been very, very successful in it.
Adam, there are other, I understand there are other platforms out there like Blackboard or mm-hmm. Canvas or something. What are these? And are you using any of those? Or does Zoom basically have its own platform where you can post stuff and the students can post stuff and so forth?
Most are doing Zoom in terms of classroom interactions, but in terms of posting assignments and posting grades and perhaps posting links to relevant articles or videos or things like that, most faculty are using Canvas or Blackboard as well. And so it's really sort of a combination of things. I think, for example, in the English department, a lot of us who teach in the English department still, we're used to getting hard paper copies of final essays or essays that students wrote in class, and we don't really have that ability anymore. And so students tend to be submitting those things either directly through email or on the My Classes or Canvas sites. And so really, to do the job that we need to do requires a little bit of both, right? Again, some people are much more focused on the Zoom, others are much more focused on the other platforms. But most faculty, I think, are really using a mix of things, right? Because Zoom is great, again, for trying to substitute face-to-face interaction. It's not really a substitute at all, but it's the closest thing we have. And so, faculty tend to be using that and supplementing it with these other aspects. Most universities, I think, went to Zoom because it was a product that a lot of universities had started sort of testing with in some online offerings they had. And so it was basically already kind of up and running at a lot of institutions. If things continue into next year, I would guess that you'll start to see some people sort of experimenting with alternates to Zoom. Again, Zoom has had some issues. I think a lot of people have heard about Zoom bombing and things like this. But for the most part, if you're aware of what you're doing, you can avoid situations like that. So again, people have been kind of cobbling it together, right? I mean, this has been survival mode. How do we make it through this semester? How do we have our students be successful in this semester? And so a lot of that has been sort of just figuring out as we go. Most universities right now are trying to figure out what fall will look like. And in case fall is fully online again, sort of figuring out how do we train faculty, right? How do we get faculty more aware of the possibilities of what they could do with these virtual platforms? I think most faculty would love to get back, to regular old classes, but there are health issues connected to that. And so, again, we're just not really sure what things are going to totally look like this fall. Universities are trying to make plans, but again, not knowing how the COVID-19 illness will grow or shrink, it's really impossible to know right now. They are hoping to make some decisions, I think, most schools around June, but again, a lot of it just depends on what the numbers of illnesses and deaths look like, unfortunately.
Adam, you mentioned synchronous, and I think there is a counter to that called asynchronous methodology. This is one of the ways in which the students interact with the faculty is through, and of course, one of the most important aspects of education is interacting with the faculty, and for students to interact with each other.
Definitely, as well.
And of course, you've talked about Zoom and the value of Zoom. What are synchronous systems, and what is the asynchronous system, and how are they used by faculty?
Yeah, and I kind of hinted at this before. You know, the synchronous is basically the Zoom meetings, right? Where you as a instructor are live doing your thing sort of in the moment. The students are populated on your screen, so hopefully you can see all of them or at least tell that they're there. And so the synchronous model is really attempting to get as close to the classic face-to-face college classroom model. Again, it's not remotely close, right? There are a lot of things that you can pick up when you're actually in a room with people in a way that you can't online. But again, that's the idea of the synchronous, right? To try in some ways to get as close to that traditional college classroom sort of experience.
Can the students in this synchronous system, I have this vision of the professor at the in one box, and then are, if you have 30 students or maybe 20 students in the room, are they all in their individual boxes? And then the second question to that is, through this method, can they talk to each other? Can they talk across to each other?
They can. Again, the ideal situation for Zoom is that every student is there. And, you know, we can talk about complications that some students have, but the ideal model is that, so if I'm the instructor, yeah, I've got my 28, 30 students, and they each have their little box on screen, excuse me, and there's also a function in Zoom where you can look at participants and people can raise their hands. You see a little digital hand go up, and so I can say, Hal, you had a question or a comment. And so, again, it is not quite perhaps as spontaneous as true face-to-face, but if one student asks a question or makes a comment, another student can certainly chime in on that, right? There's difficulties sometimes with muting people. You know, if you've got 30 people and everybody's unmuted, it can get a bit chaotic. But again, most faculty, I think, have really figured that out pretty quickly, that, you know, you wait for a hand to go up, call on that student. And so, again, it lacks a bit of the naturalness of the face-to-face classroom. But yes, students are, I think, very much encouraged to share their opinions and interpretations on what they're working on in the same way as the traditional face-to-face classroom. The asynchronous model, faculty who have chosen that are really working for student interaction in digital ways, right? So I know a number of faculty, for example, are using digital posting platforms. So I know one faculty member, for example, who for every class period, students must write a response to what they have read, right? A sort of intellectual kind of response to it. But in addition, one of their other assignments is to respond to another student's response. And so it's not live, but you're still trying to get that interaction between students and faculty and between students and other students. And so, again, you know, with the asynchronous, classes are not meeting at the usual times and everybody's sitting here on Zoom. It's much more that if I were doing an asynchronous class, again, I would post my lectures online. I might post links to scholarly articles or videos of some ways that might connect to what we're doing, and that students kind of do that on their own time. And so there's two different terms that are often used. Remote teaching is synchronous, right? And so we're doing it as close as we can to face-to-face in the old-fashioned way, but we're doing it remotely, right? The asynchronous is in some ways more of what most people are familiar with online education, where things are just put on a website, students log in whenever they want within the, you know, the semester time, do their assignments sort of at their leisure and turn them in as long as it's by the due date. And so again, I think different faculty, depending on their teaching styles and perhaps their subject matter, have chosen either one or the other or a mix of the two. for some disciplines, it's obviously more complicated than others, right? I think of the hard sciences. How do we do lab experiments via Zoom or via online platforms? And so there are a number of complications that still have to be sort of worked out. This is totally new to, I'm guessing, about 97% of faculty. I may not be quite that high, but pretty close. And so, again, a lot of it has been sort of cobbling it together for this semester to make sure that the students succeed. If we have to continue, I think there's going to have to be some rethinking about some of the specifics of how we approach this.
Well, I just wanted to ask, Adam, if you're a math teacher or a physics professor, and you need the blackboard to do calculations or to do diagrams, physical diagrams, is that available on the platform? Now, I know on Zoom you can do the share screen function.
Right.
Is that what they do?
Some of them do. I think a lot of them are perhaps using that share screen function to show, but I also know a couple of other faculty members who have, I believe of their own accord, have gotten hold of a white dry erase board and they set it up right behind them. And so they kind of use it like a good old fashioned blackboard in some ways. And so again, there's not like a set model. I think there wasn't time for us to necessarily all figure out the best practices. And so again, we've been doing what we can. It is interesting that there were also a number of faculty who did not have, functioning laptops to work on from home. They didn't have decent enough internet access at home because faculty were used to doing this work in their offices. And so in the same way that there have been students who've really faced some challenges, there are a number of faculty who have faced very similar challenges as well.
You mentioned the labs. Mm-hmm. How are labs being conducted now, or are they not?
I personally do not know the answer to that. I know that this has really been one of the challenges in the science, that I think that they are, students were still enrolled in lab classes, and so they are figuring out a way to do it. Again, being in the humanities, I don't really know exactly how they're doing it, but I do know that faculty have committed to sort of keeping the learning outcomes the same. Again, it's a lot more challenging, but I think faculty are figuring out different ways to sort of try to work around these things. Again, it's much more challenging in some disciplines than others. I don't know personally exactly how the scientists are doing, but I can only imagine the outrageous challenges of it.
The students, do they ever, is it all done online, Adam, or do the students send in paper on occasion? Do you get any paper at all or
no? Oh, no. We have not seen actual printed paper, I think, for the vast, I don't know of anybody who's still relying on paper, just because you'd have to mail that in. And again, with contagion issues. No, I think everything is coming in online, either through email or on these digital platforms. And again, for those of us who are used to sitting there with a red pen in the old-fashioned way, it is a markedly different sort of exercise. I mean, it's a totally new world for the vast majority of us, students and faculty alike.
What is the switch to online learning and the closing down of the campuses? What is that doing to the area of research?
It's interesting. This is one of the really complicated things that again, the Faculty Senate really looked at. And one of the, and I mentioned this earlier, one of the policies that the Senate pushed through and was adopted by the administration was an optional pushback of a tenure and promotion clock by a year. Because the reality is, scientists are not able to get into their labs to do their research. Other, more sort of humanities academics are not able to get into the library. The libraries are shut down right now. And while there is some online access to things, that's very often not how even people in the humanities do research. A lot of times we will go and just spend hours in the library kind of poring over things. And so it is definitely, I think, going to potentially have a very serious impact. And again, I think this is why most universities have followed a similar path, trying to offer junior faculty who are in many ways judged by their research, the chance of a one-year delay so they don't get too far behind in what they're doing. Because again, you know, at institutions like Salisbury and most other ones, faculty are expected to do research in order to get tenured and promoted, but we can't hold them to the same standards if they can't access what they're doing their research on or where they're doing their research, if we think of a lab or a library. And so, yeah, it is definitely going to have an impact that will be felt for a number of years to come. You know, even if everybody was healed up tomorrow, this will have an impact that we'll see for the next 3 or 4 years, I think, in some ways.
How are exams given now, and how are they monitored? How do you know whether the students are cheating or not? But I know.
Yeah, again, I think different faculty are doing it different ways. You know, some faculty, again, are doing them over Zoom right in the moment. And so I guess in the same way that you'd be sitting in a classroom looking at people, trying to catch them if they were cheating, a very similar thing. Other faculty, I don't know if any of our on our campus have used this, but some faculty have turned to there are sort of proctoring websites. There are also programs that can freeze a student's computer. Again, I don't believe we've been using that here, but the idea is that so if a student is taking an exam, the program basically freezes their computer on that exam, so they can't go to Google or somewhere else to look something up. And so again, you know, that's one of those things that again we weren't really prepared for that. Again, I know other faculty have shifted to more sort of essay exams, right? So those are tougher to fudge in some ways, right? It's one thing to just look up some data and put it on a quiz or an exam in some ways, but the take-home sort of essay exams, you know, you can still get that information, but it's a different sort of exam. And so again, I think faculty have been approaching this from every possible route, but it's interesting. I have heard from a lot of faculty that grading exams and papers is taking them about twice as long as it has previously, right? That this is just new. We're totally unfamiliar with this. And so it's really eating up a lot more time. Again, even in terms of preparation for classes, it eats up a lot more time. You know, if I've taught a novel or a short story dozens of times before, you know, and normally would feel pretty comfortable with it, once you're in that different environment, it is a different sort of thing. You know, you can't just pretend you're in a face-to-face classroom, even if you're doing Zoom. It requires really sort of different approaches.
I can certainly understand that. In relationship to the fall, you mentioned thinking about what might happen in the fall. A lot of educators and a lot of universities are thinking that perhaps there is going to be a 15 to 20% reduction in enrollment in the fall. And the question really is, how are universities going to respond to this? And of course, for parents, as part of this a drop in enrollment, of course, parents are thinking, are they going to want to pay? And I don't know what tuition is at Salisbury, but some universities are $50,000 and they go all the way up to $70,000 and $80,000.
Yeah, thankfully, SU is much lower than that. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. But the question is, whatever it might be, are parents and students going to be willing to pay, even if it's $20,000 a year, for online learning, to sit at home and do your work on your computer in the kitchen or in your bedroom?
Yeah, no, because you know, one of the other things that we have to kind of keep in mind is that when students are paying for college, or their parents are paying for college, or they're taking out loans for it, it's not just the classes that they're paying for, right? Particularly, you know, students that we think about living on campus, right? There's room and there's board and there's meal plans and all these sorts of things. And so universities across the country, I'm sure across the globe, have been having to give some massive refunds back to students, right? Students who were, in essence, kicked out of their dorms halfway through the semester, understandably so, given COVID-19. But that, again, yeah, you most schools approached it as, you know, needing to refund part of that money for that. And so you're right, you know, that when we think about the traditional college experience of going to classes and living in dorms and doing all that sort of stuff, if students do not have access for that in the fall, they're not going to want to pay for it. You're totally right about that.
The another issue, though, related to that, and we've got a few minutes left, is the sense that revenues clearly are going to fall for universities. And if universities can open again in the fall, then maybe they can cover the budget. However, Dr. Fauci and even Michael Murphy, Dr. Murphy on our program last week, indicated that they in fact expect another spike in the number of cases caused by the virus. So if the university does not reopen, if one continues with online learning in the fall, what kind of impact, Adam, do you sense that will have on the individual universities? Some have endowments they will dip into; others, like can weather the process, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, there's been a ton of articles, you know, an essay has been written about this in the past few weeks on the Chronicle of Higher Education or Inside Higher Ed, and so, you know, there's, for every essay, there's a different projection. And the honesty is, in some ways, people don't really know. I think, you know, the Ivy League schools, you know, they will be fine. They have tremendous endowments. They will be just fine. They tend to have enough students that apply that they're going to be fine. Schools like Salisbury, again, I think will be fine, right? Sort of more mid-sized schools, regional public comprehensives are going to be taking a big hit. And yeah, I mean, you know, I know that SU is kind of right now, again, there's a COVID-19 task force that's really working on this. But a lot of, you know, I can say as for chair of the department, already looking at fall enrollments, it wouldn't surprise me if we had about a 20% dip in the fall. Again, this is early projections, so we don't really know. And so, yeah, that's going to have an impact on faculty employment, all these kinds of things. And so that there will be, I think, and I don't mean to be pessimistic about this, but there will be, I think, a number of smaller universities across the country that will probably end up closing down within the next year, 2 years tops, right? These smaller schools that just do not have the endowment, they do not have the student demand. And a lot of times these smaller schools are also very expensive and they will simply not be able to maintain. And so there are a number of higher education experts who are really projecting a pretty radical shift in higher ed generally over the next few years. At the same time, it's interesting that there was a study done with current students and prospective students, and the students are desperate to get back to face-to-face. And so even if there is that big hit in the fall, or even perhaps next year, right, I think there may be a number of parents who are encouraging their kids to take that gap year, right, to skip a year. It's going to be a pretty rough hit for about a year, but I do believe in the long run for most schools, it will end up leveling out.
Adam, we're about out of time here, so I really appreciate your coming on, and I want to ask you, a lot of universities are going to make decisions probably in the middle of July or a little bit later in July about whether they're going to open or not, or how they're going to open, what methodologies they're going to use. I was wondering if after Salisbury makes its decision, if it is in July, would you be willing to come back on?
Of course, I'd be glad to.
And talk about what the new normal for Salisbury is going and other universities
of course.
Is going to look like after this fall and through the winter.
I'd be glad to.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Adam. I really appreciate your joining us. And quite frankly, I really appreciate all the other time that you have given to Delmarva Public Radio.
Well, thank you. I look forward to when we can get back to the normal with it.
Well, I want to thank you for that as well. Thanks for joining us, all of you. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.